Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're listening to the Sitting in the Park show. My name is Bob. Today we're going to be starting off the show with an interview with a member of a group called The Suspects. And it's going to be an interesting interview, and they're an unusual group because they started off as a band who didn't sing and then became a singing group. So you should definitely tune in. They have some excellent records, which we'll be playing and talking about. So right here in the studio right now, I have a member of the group. Do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Marvin Glass of The Suspects, and I'm glad to be here with you today, Bob.
Yeah, thanks for coming down. So first of all, you guys, let's start off with how the group formed and when you guys formed.
Well, we basically formed in grade school.
Okay.
And it was a thing where...
What part of Chicago are you from?
Southeast side of Chicago.
What
Lake
area?
Park area, High Park area, you may call it.
Okay.
And it was a thing basically where, you know, young kids wanted to be in a talent show, and I played a little guitar because my father played, and just got the other guys together and say, well, you have to play this or you have to play that.
Okay.
And it started from there.
So it's interesting that you formed that early, actually, in grade school, like just the fact that you could get instruments together and play
right.
them.
Right. Drummer's first drum set, I remember, cost about $15.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he decided that he wanted to play the drums, and he just bought a drum set?
We said, okay, if you want to be with us, you're going to play the drums.
Okay, so you formed around what grade, do you remember?
About fourth or fifth grade.
Oh, that's really early. So was that in the late 60s?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the late 60s, yeah. And
so did you all go to the same grammar school?
Same grammar school, Judd School. They call it some type of center now. But
okay.
That time it was Judd School, right on 44th and Lake Park.
Okay, and you all lived around the same block, too?
Same block, two doors down, the next block over. So we'd be out in the alley playing. And
so you were just like, let's start a band, pretty much?
Basically, yeah.
Was there like bands at the time that you wanted to emulate?
Well, at that time, to be perfectly honest, radio-wise or exposure-wise, were mainly a lot of white bands at the time.
Okay.
The Beatles and okay. all that type of stuff. And to be perfectly honest, we played a little bit of their music, too, at the time.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. So then you were together for a while. So what was the lineup of the group?
We had Gregory Harrison played bass guitar.
Okay.
Gregory Rice played lead guitar.
Okay.
At Clifton Lott played organ.
Okay.
And Clifton Lott was more kind of like the lead man of the group. He was kind of a natural, get out there and get it going type guy.
Okay.
And we had Napoleon Jordan on drums.
Okay.
And I played rhythm guitar myself. And I later switched to bass after we lost one member.
Okay. So you were together for a while, and then you entered high school, and you were still just playing. Is that right?
Well, in high school, yeah, we were just playing behind vocal groups.
Okay.
We were the backup band, or you could say we get out there and we just do instrumental type things.
So like a talent shows, that type of thing?
Yeah, talent shows and stuff like that.
So what were some of the groups that came out of your high school? Did anyone record?
None that I can remember. We played, like, you have little battles of the bands, and we had one of our favorite battles was with a group called the Superiors and names like that, you know.
So what high school did you go to?
We went to different high schools. I went to Lindblom High School.
Okay.
Some of the guys went to Forestville High School. And I think one of the guys went to Simeon High School.
Okay, but you were all from the same block and you stayed together?
Yeah, we stayed together. And they gave us the opportunity to do the talent shows at each high school.
Okay.
You know, so it's always something to look forward to.
So then you eventually, near the end of high school... So first of all, one more question is, you were called the Soul Suspects back then, is that right?
Right.
Was that the original name of the group you had in grade school?
Yeah, the original name of the group was Soul Suspects.
Any story about how you came up with the name?
No real story. It's just like, hey, well, somebody come up with a name.
Okay.
And I remember we had a list of names, and hey, that sounds good. Yeah, we'll go with that. We'll be the Soul Suspects.
Okay. So then by the end of your high school, like your senior year, you were all about the same age, too, is that right?
Yeah. One or two years apart sometime, yeah.
So by your senior year in high school, you ended up cutting a record.
Yeah, with Black Prince Records.
Yeah, and that was owned by the larger company,
Shelby Singleton Records.
So what's the story behind that? How did you end up cutting a record?
Well, I believe that a producer, local producer, Carl Tartan saw us at one of these talent shows.
Okay, so at a high school talent show?
At a high school talent show.
So I didn't realize they went around to like...
I don't know if he was there because he had somebody else in the show, a relative or something.
Okay.
Well, but he said, oh, boy, you guys are good. I can do something for you, get you some shows and stuff like that. And it kind of started from there.
Okay.
And it was a thing where at the time he had asked us, well, do you guys have any original material?
Mm-hmm.
Well, be perfectly honest, we didn't, but we said we did.
Okay.
You know, he said, "Well, okay, well, put it on tape, and I'll take a listen to it." And we heard him put something together, and he liked it, and it kind of went from there.
Okay, so I'll play the record, and we could talk some more.
Okay, that'd be fine.
So, this is the Soul Suspects with their first record. This is called "Handle It." Okay, that was just the Soul Suspects with their very first record called Handle It. Right now in the studio is Marvin Glasper, member of the Soul Suspects. So do you remember what year that record came out?
That had to be about 1970.
70, okay.
Yeah, about 1970, 1971, around that time.
So you said that Carl Tarleton, the promoter, just like saw you in the talent show.
At a talent show.
So what's the story? Like, he just like do this record?
Well, it was a thing where he said, well, I can get you all some shows, and
okay.
Do you have any original material?
Okay.
And at the time, we didn't, but of course we said we did.
Okay.
And so it was a rush to put something together for him.
Okay, so you wrote the song.
Well, you know, that song actually came from us just like being at rehearsal and somebody playing something.
Just a jam, pretty much.
Yeah, just a jam session. Hey, we can get this together. We went from there.
Yeah, it's pretty hip sounding, especially with the rap on it. You said Clifton Lott is a guy.
Clifton Lott. See, because at that time, Clifton Lott was basically the only vocalist. He was the lead person.
Okay.
And the rest of us, we really didn't sing, you
okay.
know. And then later, we got into the singing part, the backup harmonies and different lead vocals, and from there, we went from there.
Yeah, which definitely you could hear on the second record.
Yeah.
So you were telling me some story about how Carl Tarleton had to convince your parents to...
Oh, yeah.
Do this record.
It was the thing where, you know, our parents were kind of naive about the music business and everything, and at the time, he had a shiny new Cadillac.
Okay.
So he pulled up in front of the house, and he called our parents outside. Like, say, we all lived on the same block and stuff like that. And said, what color do you think your kid ought to have? And parents were, what color what? what color Cadillac, because these guys are going to be big, and I'm trying to help them pick the color Cadillac they want. You know, and our parents, you know, oh, boy, our kids are going to be famous. So they were ready to sign anything at the time, you know, so that's it went from there.
So that's pretty funny. So then another interesting thing is, obviously you said you started in the 60s trying to emulate even like rock bands.
Oh, yeah.
But by the time this record came out, it was like much more specific sound you had.
Right.
So like what was the kind of sound you were going for in the record?
With that particular record, it was just a jam session type sound, you know.
But I mean, there were other funk groups at the time. Right?
There were... if you notice, it kind of has a little tighten up feel to it. Well, but actually, that was actually done before Tighten Up even came out.
Actually, Tighten Up came out in like the late 60s.
Yeah, and we kind of had that from a jam session, but it wasn't an actual song.
So, but there were other kind of bands in Chicago, like the Sons of Slum, too.
Sons of Slums. We would go see the bands who were bigger than us at the time and stuff. Because, you know, we kind of looked up to them, say, hey, maybe we can do shows at the
Chaparral. And you were still in high school at the time.
Yeah, we were still in high school, you know.
So they and the B side of this record has a tighten up type of sound more than it's a song called the Funky Drop.
Yeah.
So was that like a dance?
Was supposedly going to be a dance.
Okay.
We hadn't created the dance yet.
Okay.
Well, but we say okay. Well, by the time this comes out, we'll come up with something.
Okay.
You know? And on this end, it just never came out as far as we knew.
Okay.
From the business end, so we never created a dance for it.
Okay, yeah, in the song, which we'll play in a second, like you say, like you're describing the dance in the song. You're like, it's kind of like the yoke.
Yeah.
So did this record get any play in Chicago?
No, didn't get any play at all.
Okay. Yeah. But you said your relatives heard it in other cities.
Well, you know, it was real strange because it's like I had a relative out in the L.A. area. And she comes and says, well, I got your records on the radio, and you guys up to number two.
Okay.
And see, I'll play it for next time it comes on, I'll call you. And she called me, and they announced the record. I heard it playing, you know, I hoped, oh, boy, it's coming this way.
Okay.
And we check with the record company. They say, okay, we're just doing it out there. It's coming this way, but it never made it all the way here.
Yeah, maybe it has something to do with also the company's not based in Chicago either.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, That record, just a note, you said it was Carl Tarleton. On the record, too, it says Andre Williams also.
Right.
Like, they had a production company called JoJo Productions.
Yeah, they had
done a bunch of other groups, too. Like, I interviewed the Wasters. They were up in here, and they had done the Green Berets with that production company. So you were probably the other group that
they
did.
Right.
So let me play the B-side, and we could talk some more. Okay. So this is The Soul Suspects with Funky Drop.
Thank you.
Okay, that was just the Soul Suspects with the flip of their first record. That was the funky drop. And right here in the studio now is Marvin Glasper, member of the group, talking about his band. So that record came out, and you said it didn't really get played in Chicago. And
no, it really didn't get any play here in Chicago.
But the group actually stayed together for a long time, like, because your second record came out 5 years later.
Right.
So what was the group doing at the time?
We were just doing local shows, you know, just whatever would come up. And because we had a kind of distrust for the music industry at that time.
Because you got ripped off.
Yeah, because basically got ripped off. And I mean, somebody come up to me and go, oh, no, this is not going to happen again, you know. So we kind of just kind of laid low until, you know, we kind of, people would tell us, why don't y'all do something else again? You know,
so,
give it another try.
So you were a band, but it was unusual for a band to do shows. Usually they would be backing a group or they're part
backing
of a review.
Group, right.
So what was happening at the shows?
Well, what was happening was, it's like we would have rehearsals for the backup, to be in the backup band. And the group we were rehearsing for wasn't there. So,
okay.
Hey, we need somebody to sing these parts so we know when to do the changes.
Okay.
So we'd start singing the parts.
Okay.
We said, wait a minute. Hey, I think we can do this, you
okay.
know. And it kind of went from there.
So that's how you started doing, like, your own...
Doing our own vocals
so
and
at,
stuff.
At shows, you actually sang and...
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
we
so,
would sing, and we were kind of a, just say, Earth, Wind, and Fire type.
Okay, so what kind of songs did you do? Did you do covers of songs of the day, pretty much?
Yeah, pretty much whatever was happening then, Temptation songs or whatever, you know, and we had so many different voices in there. Everybody was a lead singer.
Okay.
You know, so it kind of worked out fine, kind of worked out. Even the drummer, later, he wasn't... Originally, he was just a backup singer.
Okay.
But then he kind of practiced and rehearsed, and hey, but that's a place for you, too. So it really made it really good.
So what types of places did you play?
We played the High Chaparral.
Okay.
At that time, they had a bunch of local clubs, the Green Bunny.
Okay.
Bill Street was a big club at the time where they had live performances and stuff. And later, we would rent out Bill Street and put our own review on.
Okay.
And, I mean, that worked out really good.
So at the shows, again, was it just your band, or was there other acts with you?
Well, it depended. When we did our own review, it was just us.
Oh, okay.
And occasionally we'll bring in, it was a girl group we worked with called Goddess at the time.
Okay.
And we'd bring them in, and then we'd do our own thing.
Okay. So, and then did you have a local following, too?
Oh, we had a real good local following, and that basically came from a guy named Earl Calloway at Chicago Defender.
Okay.
Who became a real good promoter for us.
Okay, so what's the story behind that?
Well, Earl Calloway was the entertainment director at Chicago Defender. And one of the guys in the group, Clifton Lott, was looking for a job at one point.
Okay.
So he had to use a washroom, no other way to put it. So he ran in there to use the washroom and was in the stall singing.
Okay.
And this guy came in and heard him singing in the stall and liked his voice. And when he came out, he said, well, you know, he told him, hey, I'm looking for a job. I play with this band and stuff. He said, well, I'd like to come here to hear you guys. And he came to our rehearsal and heard us. And from that point on, you know, he gave us a few little tips and things. And he said, whenever you all do a show or something, let me know.
Okay.
And, I mean, it didn't make any difference how small it seemed to be.
Okay.
He made it seem gigantic in the paper. And, I mean, he took some nice pictures of us, had us, you know, get ready and took some nice promo pictures of us. And, I mean, wherever we played, we would play at the mall. And
okay.
It would be packed.
So you were ridden up in the Defender a lot?
Oh, yeah. We were
okay.
in the Bud Billick Parade
okay.
a couple of times where we played at the end of parade.
Okay.
You know, so it was a very good promotion.
Okay. Well, I'm going to play your second record, and then we can mm-hmm. talk some more. So this is a totally different sound for you because it's like
right.
a group harmony type sound.
Right.
And this is actually, I really like this record. This is like one of my favorite Chicago records. I played this during, I do like a best of show every
okay.
year. And I played this record during the show. This is The Suspects with That's How I Feel.
Thank you. did have a little heart.
Okay, that was just the Suspects with their record, That's How I Feel. Right now in the studio is a member of the Suspects, Marvin Glasper, talking about his group and the records they cut. So first of all, why'd you drop the soul from the name? You just became the Suspects for that?
It was just a thing, a time thing. You know, it's like the soul this, the soul that, it kind of faded out. You know?
Okay.
But we were recognized as a lot of people just call us the Suspects. They go to Suspects. They wouldn't even say soul. So
that's pretty funny, because next week I'm interviewing the Soul Procedures, and they became just the Procedures.
Right.
Although there was, I also interviewed the Soul Majestics, and they stayed as the Soul Majestics.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. The soul thing kind of faded out during that time, so we just kind of cut it off, you know.
Okay, so the lineup had actually changed for the record too, is that right?
Well, the only difference is, like, with that song, That's How I Feel and stuff, we were down to four members.
Okay.
Gregory Hardison, who was the original bass player, he went on to do other things.
Oh, did he do other music things, you know?
No, he just stopped playing music. Really.
Started a career, pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah.
So on that record, you, first of all, you cut it kind of, you released it yourself almost, like it was
yeah,
a local label.
On that one, it was a thing where we worked with, I think it was Kadarian Records.
Yeah, he was like a local kind of.
He was more a promoter.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a thing where he said, well, okay, you guys go to the studio and when you can bring me a master, I'll make these copies for it, and then I'll promote them.
So did you have to pay him to press the record, pretty much?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, we did.
So he pressed on his label, and the label, it was called Windy City, or Windy Sea, or something.
Windy City Records.
Yeah.
The thing about it, that was really a kind of a, I won't say it was a scam, but it was kind of like a person presenting themselves to be more than what they were.
Okay, you told me some story about how you were supposed to meet him in his
oh,
office.
Oh, yeah. The thing was, he gave us the impression that he had this office down in Marina City.
Okay.
And he said, okay, well, I tell you what, come down to Marina City and wait by the elevators.
Okay.
And I'll come down. I'll meet you there at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
So we got there a little early, you know, 12:30, 12:45. So we went over to the desk. So, yeah, we're looking for, I don't even remember the guy's name at this point. From Kadarian Records. He goes, Windy City Records. Goes, no, it's nobody here in the building with that name. So finally, I mean, the guy came, but we saw him come from outside.
Okay.
So we figured, okay, well, no big deal. We're going up to your office? No, we could just take care of business right here. And things just didn't feel right. Things didn't feel right. We were giving this guy this master tape, and we were giving him money.
Okay.
And so what we did, we kind of took the telephone number and checked it through the telephone company, and he was working out of his house on the north side somewhere. And
yeah, he's a guy that pressed. He also pressed up the Brothers of the Ghetto record.
Oh,
they had
really?
A song called Rockin' Chair around the same time as your record.
Okay,
he did that too, so I must have tricked them too.
Yeah.
So you pretty much paid for the whole recording yourself.
Yeah, we paid. Oh,
and
we did.
And you paid for the pressing of the record.
For the pressing, and then it's like we put a little bit of pressure on him about it, and he ended up giving us at that time boxes of copies he had printed up.
Do you know how many he pressed?
I'm gonna guess right off the top of my head, I'm going to say 250.
Okay.
That we got back.
So he gave you like 250 of them?
Yeah.
He was supposed to promote it, but he didn't?
No, he didn't.
So what did you do with the records? Did it get any play in Chicago?
No, because at that time that was kind of during the time when they had the big payola thing.
Yeah.
Scandal and stuff.
And there were a lot more major, by 75 it was all major labels.
Yeah, you know, so if you didn't know somebody to play it, it wouldn't get played. It got played in some of the clubs,
okay,
like we'd go to or something, and the DJ say, hey, could you play this for me? And, yeah, if he liked it, he'd play it.
Okay.
You know?
So did you sell the record yourself since you had a bunch of copies of it?
No, we didn't try to sell as far as making profit. We did some shows. We gave some away far as figuring, you know, get a little promotion that way.
Okay.
And
so you were still doing shows, and you performed that song at shows?
Yeah, when we did the second round of dealing with the record thing, we would perform at shows just to get a feel of how the audience responded.
Okay.
To it, and we seemed to get a real good response from it at the time.
Okay.
Because it was more of a something they could relate to at the time, you know.
But you couldn't pretty much get it picked up by a major label or anything like that?
Well, the thing was, to be perfectly honest, we didn't know how.
Okay.
And we didn't have a manager, and we was, like I say, scared of the music industry. Managers and all say, hey, we're going to be our own manager.
So you didn't have the connections pretty
much.
Right.
We're going to be our own manager, our own producers, which is really a bad idea.
Okay.
You know, which is really a bad idea. And like I say, we had a little immaturity issues at the time because we were young guys. You know, we needed somebody over us to keep us in place.
Okay.
And we didn't have that.
But you actually had been together for a long time by then, too.
Yeah.
So another question is, this record sounds very different than the other record. Like, you kind of got a group harmony sound together.
Right.
Why did you change your sound? Because there were other bands in Chicago, like the Sons of Slum and the Brothers of the Ghetto, but they stayed with that sound. They didn't become a harmony group.
Well, the original sound, just say like Hanlet and that record, mainly at that time, we weren't into a harmony.
Okay.
It was just the lead guy at the time, Clifton Lott, who did most stand out front singing and dancing type thing. You
okay.
know? And later we say, hey, well, you know, we're going to change with the times. We're going to expand ourselves a little bit. And we had to do that to have a complete show.
Okay.
So we worked on it and stuff. Say, hey, well, we can do this.
Okay.
And it came from there.
So your sound had pretty much changed.
Oh, yeah. It had matured a lot.
And another question is, somebody told me they'd seen you on TV back in the day.
The W.L. Lillett Show.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's still on TV, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he is still
But he's
on
not
there.
Doing like a new
no,
show.
No, he's not doing that type of show. Yeah. W.L. Lillett Show was a good show. It was kind of a part dance show.
Okay.
And, you know, he'd feature bands on there and stuff at the time. And that was a lot of fun at that time.
So you had been on his show a bunch of times?
Yeah. We've been on there, and he called us back a couple of times to come back and do the show. And I think we really originally got that connection through Earl Calloway at Chicago Defender.
Okay.
And
so what years was his show on, or that you were on the show?
Oh, boy. 70s.
Okay. So yeah. Probably sometime in the early 70s you were on the show.
Yeah, early 70s and stuff. Because I do recall, like, even when my last year in high school, which was around 71.
Okay.
We were on that show because we came back to school and the kids at school were talking about us being on the show. So
okay.
It was around that time then after we got out. But when we did the other songs, the other record and stuff, no, we weren't on there that time.
So I'm going to play the B-side of the record, which is also really good. So who wrote that A-side, the That's How I Feel side?
Gregory Rice.
And this side is called Here I Am. Who wrote this side?
Myself.
Okay, so this is The Suspects with Here I Am, and then we'll talk some more.
Here I am.
Okay, that was just the Suspects with the B-side of their second record. That was really nice. That was called Here I Am. And we've been doing an interview with Marvin Glasper, member of the Suspects. So what happened? That last record came out around 1975. I think that's the date on the record.
About 1975.
So what happened after that? Like, did the group continue for a while? Or?
We played 1975. We played maybe 2 years after that. And it was just a thing of, like I say, immaturity set in, and we couldn't decide which route to take. And we just kind of let our little personal feelings and little egos at the time.
I would be bitter too after, like, you've been together for so long and you weren't successful. Like, that's where a lot of groups, they just tried really hard for a while and then nothing happened. So, and actually, that was kind of a bad time to be in Chicago because around 75, the music industry was dying in Chicago.
Right, definitely.
So pretty much the group kind of faded, like, disbanded after that.
And, you know, it mainly came from, like, one guy kind of made the decision, and that was Gregory Rice, who was a lead guitar player. And he said, well, man, this isn't working for me. I'm going to do something else.
Okay.
And after being together so long, you feel that, you know, you just can't replace this person with another person.
Okay.
You know, and it's like, hey, it doesn't make sense to go out and get
Yeah, you weren't like one of the groups that had, like, changing lineups and stuff. You
right.
were consistent.
Consistent.
Lineup.
We had the original members, like, say, from grade school.
Okay.
And only one guy had dropped out, and we, you know, struggled to replace him, and we found a way to do it within the group. You know, it made each one of us a little bit more talented doing it. But when you only got four, you can't afford to lose somebody who's doing three things.
Yeah. So did you have you done any music stuff since?
No.
Do you still play the guitar?
I haven't played the guitar in a while.
Okay.
Every once in a while, I'll look. It's still sitting in the corner. I'll look at it. I'll pick it up. I'll tune it and start playing something a little bit and stuff. But other than that, that's about it.
Okay. Do you know if any of the other members did any music stuff since?
No. Clifton Lott, right after that, he tried to play with different bands and stuff.
Okay.
And it was just like he was so restricted. Because, like, in our band, like I said, he was the lead person. Now he's in these other bands, and he's in the shadows. And he just played keyboard or something like that, and that didn't work for him.
Okay.
And he moved to Minnesota, and I heard from him a couple of times after that, but...
Well, if you talk to him, you could tell him about the interview.
Oh, that would really be something to tell if I talked to any of them, yeah.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you coming down. It definitely, I think both your records are excellent records. Like, I really like the Harmony one, and the first one is really collectible with funk collectors. Like,
yeah.
Young people like me are people getting into the, you know, collecting funk records.
Okay.
So I appreciate you coming down and telling your story.
Oh, it feels good to tell it, and it feels good to know that somebody's even still listening to it.
Yeah, definitely. I like your records a lot. So, okay, well, thanks so much for coming down. And if anyone has any questions, you can call up. The number here is 773-702-8255.